Welcome to Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and explore ways to help students and teachers thrive. Thank you for tuning into this episode. Are students ready for college? A conversation on readiness and resilience. Education is evolving in many ways, with such a variety of opportunities and academic models available, especially in Florida. How are we assessing student readiness for college in today's world? As Director for College Readiness and Early College Programs at State College of Florida, Manatee, Sarasota, Raul Lorenzo can share his insights firsthand.
Raul, I'm so happy to have you on today's podcast. I know Thomas teed up our introduction earlier today, and we really want to talk about kind of the readiness of students as they're moving into post-secondary education. But before we get into that topic, I'd love for you to share with the listeners a little bit about your story.
First of all, thank you so much for the invite. I really appreciate it. It's always nice to be able to come on and talk a little bit about, the work that we do, not just at SEF, but certainly to through the schools that we serve and the students that we serve. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course. Raul, you actually were born in Puerto Rico and lived your first 10 years of your life there. Is that right?
Yeah, I was born in Puerto Rico, and at age 10, actually, you know what? It was November 1985. My mother decided that she was going to move to the United States as a single mom looking for opportunity. My journey to this particular position in the work that I do currently really did start very early on. I was about a freshman in high school, I think. You know, I was a low-income kid in an inner city neighborhood, and my mom, who was a single mom at the time, someone that knew her and knew us recommended that this guy come and talk to us, who was recruiting students to attend a program called Upward Bound.
Oh, you know, yes.
Part of the TRIO programs. And this gentleman showed up at our house and started telling my mom about this program. And she obviously agreed, and she, you know, signed documentation, et cetera, to get us signed up. And then it quickly dawned on me that I was expected to give up my summers to do academic work. And I remember looking at my mom thinking, what the heck is she doing? You know, in all reality, it did end up changing my trajectory considerably from an academic standpoint. Whereas I may have had the inclination or the desire to go to college, it was a foreign concept to me. This program really guided me in terms of what it took, not just to get into college, but what it took to persevere and be successful in college. That completely changed my trajectory. And I remember when I graduated college, I wanted nothing more than to just work with young people in a similar capacity, helping them navigate the path to higher education, to post-secondary enrollment. I started working right out of college at the University of Massachusetts Amherst as an admissions counselor, and I fell in love with the work, not just helping families navigate the process, but more importantly, helping young, at-risk, first-generation to college students understand what it took to not only apply, but to enroll and to persist and achieve the whatever goals or dreams they had. Right after UMass, I had the opportunity to become the director of an Upward Bound program at Holyoke Community
College. Well, you really went full circle.
I really did.
That's terrific.
I really did. Unfortunately, I had to leave that job because our second child was born, and my wife decided, hey, I want to stay home and take care of the kids. So I had to figure out, okay, how do I make that happen? Probably the single most difficult decision that I had to make, because obviously family's important. My kids were important. So it was certainly the right decision. But I promised myself that if I ever got the opportunity to go back and do similar work or to continue that work, that I would take that opportunity without any hesitation. And it just so happened that that opportunity opened up for me here at State College of Florida. And when I was offered the position, I there's no way I was going to say no.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And what I love so much about what you were sharing in your story is how it really maybe, and you didn't use his exact phrase, but it kind of turned the light on for you, and particularly for being a first generation student, or maybe your mom not knowing the pathways in the American education system, you really then created a, you had a heart for those students who were following similar suits. From my vantage point, it seems as though kids don't know what they don't know. And so what are you seeing that has been really helpful to guide these students into those post-secondary pathways?
That's a great question. So yeah, absolutely. I think that along the way on my path, I encountered individuals that played an instrumental role in not only putting me on that path, but keeping me on that path.
Right? Yes.
And so I find that that is the role that we play currently in the programs that I manage. We identify young people, first generation, at risk, low income, and help them learn a little bit more about what it is that they want, what it is that they desire. And then helping them to create or establish a path that works for them. For most, that path may lead to State College of Florida or one of the universities. For others, it could be some sort of certificate program or a trade. And so when we determine that, then we can help them understand what it takes. And we spend a lot of time talking about the significance of doing well in school regardless, right? Let's start there. Your GPA plays the most important role in what options you might have directly after high school. So helping them understand that, you know, the minimum standards for graduation are that. They're the minimum standards, right? And so if you want to go to one of the universities, then you have to look at the standards that they're looking for, not necessarily the standards that the district or the school system might require of you. So the more selective schools might be looking for that kind of rigor
in
the curriculum. And, you know, for the students that we serve, because they're first generation, their parents aren't familiar with our school system, we have to not just have that conversation with the student, but also with the parent.
Well, help me understand, because at the core of this conversation today is also how ready students are. And knowing that you're working with some of the underserved communities and how these students are coming into the post-secondary pathway, we just recently read the 2024 NAEP scores are still continuing to show 12th grade students are declining in their reading and in their math scores. So from a preparation standpoint, what are you all seeing from your vantage point? Are you seeing that continual slide, and are you seeing something different?
I think that we're experiencing the same challenges that a lot of institutions like State College of Florida are experiencing. Because we are an open access institution, meaning we don't deny anyone. Everyone who wants to go on and take a shot at a college degree is able to do so. That being said, State College of Florida has any number of support systems in place to help students navigate not just our process, but to be successful in college generally. If students are able to identify the areas that they might need some support or some help, then that support and that help, it does exist, and we do offer it to them through the Tutoring Academic Success Center, through any number of our support programs.
What do you think are the causes for that lack of preparation? Because for us, we're starting to look at it more from a systemic issue, because I think the interconnectedness between general education, higher education, and so on, there's just a lot that can be argued to that point. But so that's why I'm always so curious to see from your vantage point, what are you seeing?
I'm going to speak to that question, specifically referencing the students that we serve. And those are the students that we spend a significant amount of our time helping and guiding, not just through their journey in middle school and high school, but certainly making that transition to college. What I'm finding is that they're not reading enough. They're not challenging themselves enough outside, both inside and outside an academic setting, that are going to be, in essence, asked of them as soon as they step on a campus. I also find that many of our students are English as a second language learner. So they're spending a lot of time playing catch up, depending on how long they've been here. For many of them, if we catch them early enough, then we can explain to them why it's important to challenge themselves with regards to the level of rigor within those courses. So aspiring to go honors, AP, ACE, mm-hmm. IB, any number of those accelerated academic programs that many of our high schools offer. But oftentimes they're just not aware and therefore they don't participate. I also spend a lot of my time talking to young people about considering dual enrollment as an option. But of course, we have a criteria for admissions into the particular right. program as well. And so if we start the conversation early, I'm talking about middle school, freshman okay. year, high school, yep. the latest, explaining to them what the possibilities are, what the options are, and helping them make informed decisions along the way, then we increase the likelihood that those students will start participating and taking advantage of those accelerated academic programs. For those students that continue to struggle and they're making the transition to college, at State College of Florida, we offer the Summer Bridge Program. And during the Summer Bridge Program, they take a student success course. It teaches them essentially how to navigate the system, understanding the, you know, the services that we offer, the offices that we currently have and they can tap into for help and assistance. But we also have them go through an intensive writing boost camp. That's where we help them understand what is expected of them
right.
making that transition. So they spend 6 weeks really getting into the basics and the foundation of real academic writing that is expected of them. That being said, I mean, what I think that what a lot of students don't take advantage of is placement testing. If they really don't know what level of math or what level of reading and writing they're at, it makes it very, very difficult to place them in an appropriate course. And I think that if more students took advantage of that, then I think they would be less frustrated when they encounter, you know, the level of rigor that maybe they just didn't anticipate.
So how do the students learn about this program? Do you all assess them when they're coming in? Can they voluntarily enroll into this, saying they want some additional assistance and support? And could they be potentially recommended to enroll because they're showing some, it might be a sign of intervention that is needed? Are you seeing any of those avenues of entry?
All of those.
Okay.
We put a significant amount of effort in marketing and communicating to students all of the resources they have available to them, especially the incoming freshmen. They go through an orientation process, whether it be online or face-to-face on our campus, and in fact, those numbers have increased. We don't require students to do the assessment testing.
Okay.
However, that is available to them, and they could even do the PERT in their high school.
Right,
they don't even
right.
have to do it at SCF.
Yep.
But when we have the scores, then we're able to more accurately pair them to a course that makes sense for them. If any student comes to me and says, hey, I'm thinking to, you know, about enrolling, I want to do this, the first thing I'm going to say is, let's make an appointment for you.
Yeah.
And let's have you take the PERT in all three sections. And that way I know how to best advise you.
Right.
Right? But if the student's just not ready, you know, and prepared to step into that course or into that classroom, then we're setting them up for failure. They're going to get frustrated.
And so you'll pull the trigger then in creating some interventions before, like for instance, at ENC 1101 is like the basic post-secondary English course. And so they could potentially be put in a remediation course.
Correct. And we do offer quite a few remedial mm-hmm. courses,
right.
both, you know, reading, writing, and math. But, you know, to a lot of students, you know, when you talk to them about remediation, they balk at that.
Sure.
Primarily because
the stigma.
Yes, they don't like the stigma, or they don't want to be, looked at as if they're underprepared. but it's not.
Or it could be even a setback. I mean, to many students, that's like, you know, it may have been hard for them just to get enrolled. And then they hear that news could be a perceived setback.
100%. And I think that that's what a lot of young people struggle with, right? Like if I am advised to take a remedial course to strengthen my competencies in one area, how far does that set me back?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's this perception, especially among young people, it's like, time is of the essence. You know, I got to get this done. It's like, that's the next step. I got to move forward. I always tell students, it's a marathon. It's not a race.
Right.
You know, you're in essence racing against yourself. And depending on what you got going on in your life, whether you're working full time because you need to work, you don't have the option not to work. You're helping to support family. You know, you have responsibilities of your own. Then it's unreasonable to expect that they would take on a full boat of four classes mm-hmm. or 12 credits, you know, that in and of itself is a full-time job.
Right.
So if you're having to work and then do four courses or 12 credits, you're working way over time and you're not going to have enough time in your day to really get done what you need to get done, at the very least at the quality level that needs to get done in order for you to do well in school.
Right.
It's a conversation that you have to have with every single one. It's an individual conversation.
Yeah.
The luxury that I have is that I work with a small group of young people moving through the system and coming into SEF every year. And so I have the luxury to entertain those conversations at a much deeper level and a more personal level with the young folks because, you know, I've spent the time developing that relationship. And so not just with them, but also with their parents. And it allows them to, at the very least, entertain, you know, options that maybe they didn't think about before.
Well, it sounds like State College of Florida has a lot of different support systems in place, whether it's the Summer Bridge program, it's the Reach Out program, you've got the remedial courses, you've got tutoring. But I hear within you, and something that I'm curious to know if you can substantiate, is there also like this personalization of the relationships of, because when you spoke about, you made reference to, I have a small cohort of kids that I'm working with. Do you all have like a strong ratio for that to ensure these at-risk students can make it through to completion?
We do. It's just getting students to be aware and access those resources. Our newest president, President Gregory, has challenged the entire campus community to reach higher faster, meaning that the goal is to improve our graduation rates, our retention rates. Everybody's diving in across the entire campus to determine what is it that we need to do to really up our game,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make sure that students are successful and are accessing the supports. But that aspect of relationship building is a critical component to that, because if students feel comfortable, find community on campus, and if students feel comfortable accessing those resources, they're going to access them. At least they're more likely to access those resources. And then by them just doing that, taking that one step, it increases the likelihood that they'll persist and we'll retain them and that we can achieve, you know, the ultimate goal, which is to graduate them and have them move on.
Do you track the data of students who are go through your program with no support versus those students who have sought the support? And do you compare the graduation rates? I'm just more curious about that.
That's a great question. So the institution as a whole, definitely, they have so much data that I mean, we collect on every aspect.
Sounds like the K-12 education too. There's actually more data than we need.
Exactly. I think the data exists. We're mm-hmm. collecting data. Mm-hmm. I think that the more complicated part of that, the nuanced part is, how do we translate that analysis into actionable steps that mm-hmm. actually improve the lives of students and the likelihood that they'll persist and then graduate. And that takes an entire team of individuals, an entire college, because we are one institution made up of all of these different departments, areas, right? You have your academic, you have your administration, you have, you know, frontline service, et cetera. So how do we move in unison? How do we leverage technology effectively
mm-hmm.
to make sure that we can serve more students efficiently, But then how do we help our students learn to use and navigate that technology effectively? Because I think that there's this misunderstanding that, oh, if you have some piece of technology, an app or whatever, then that should stand alone and, you know, it should resolve the problem. But that's never the case. You know, some students take to it much more easily than others. And then, you know, also is how do we help them understand what it means to be a college student and navigate our system, right? Very different than high school, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you make that transition, you graduate from high school, you start college and it was like, oh, you're an adult.
That's right.
You know,
that's exactly right.
The expectation is that you already know how to manage your time. We have to grapple with that aspect of helping students make that transition. Some are prepared and they're ready for whatever, however, either they had parents that went through it and can communicate with their students and help them navigate it effectively. A lot of students have done dual enrollment, so they're already aware in terms of registering. They've made the mistakes already. Mm-hmm. So then once they're full-time students, they have a much easier time navigating our system. But then there are those students that are at a huge disadvantage because they don't have individuals in their family that can help them navigate, not even a sibling, you know. They may not have been fortunate enough to come into contact with a program like the College Reach Out program or participate in the Summer Bridge program or dual enrollment or what have you. They weren't encouraged or taught how to navigate their high school curriculum effectively to become prepared to be a productive college student. And so those are the students that I essentially spend a lot of time identifying and hoping that I could reach in one way or another. Right?
So if there are students listening that are thinking about their post-secondary, or if there's a parent maybe that's the parent or guardian that's, you know, trying to ensure that their kids are ready, what would be a couple of like things that you would give as pearls of wisdom that student, no matter where you are right now, these are some things you can do to help prepare and make sure you are ready for that next pathway?
I think it was Al Pacino in the movie Scent of a Woman, and one of the final monologues that he said that there is no prosthetic for an amputated spirit. And I think that a lot of young people are struggling with that these days. They feel at the very least that the obstacles that they are facing are much bigger that they can bear. So they worry about the prospects of them being able to make a living, them being able to achieve the same level of financial stability or success or lack thereof that their parents and their family have achieved, right? So I think that as parents, and I include myself in that statement because I have a 20-year-old and a, you know, soon-to-be 19-year-old senior in high school. And it's something that I've struggled with is how do I help them to understand that at this time, at this moment, the last thing I need for them to worry about is what's going to happen, you know, to them in the future. I also try to foster in them a love for not just learning, but that exploration and just to be inquisitive, regardless of the subject matter. And ask questions. And then, of course, reading. Reading. I think it's a cliche that oftentimes, at the very least, it gets viewed that way, right? It's cliche. It's like, oh, reading. But the truth of the matter is that we're not doing enough of it. And so if I were to say, what can you do now in order to help students achieve? One is make sure that you keep that spirit intact and healthy and vibrant, that at the very least, whatever aspirations they may have, even at a young age in that young mind, that we nurture that. The second piece is that healthy desire to explore, to learn, to be inquisitive, to ask questions, to read. And then finally, find the key individuals along the way that have the information to help your son or daughter navigate their academic roadmap, whatever that may mean. And it's different for every student. And so meeting them where they're at, having realistic expectations in terms of what we hope them to achieve and to aspire to, whatever options, whatever trajectory they might have in front of them, that we find the best way to help them achieve those goals and those objectives.
Well, this has been really a very informative conversation, and I hope our listeners have been able to take away some of your action steps, because I think those are super important. And I think the other piece is how you led with just the spirit of the student and kind of where they are. I think that's actually a very unspoken but important challenge that we as a community and as a society are facing. So Raul, thank you again for being a part of our podcast today. For the listeners, if you're tuning in and you want to learn more about State College of Florida or any of those support systems that Raul mentioned that are a resource for many of the students, if not all the students who have an interest at State College of Florida. And you can find all that information at the State College of Florida's website at sef.edu. And anybody here that wants to learn more about the Education Foundation, you can always find us at edfoundationsrq.org. So again, thank you all so much for tuning in to Education Conversations, and be sure to check out our other episodes wherever you listen to our favorite podcasts. This is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.